to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. We have a cracker of a show for you tonight, gals and gents. Wash your black heads, grab a seat, and enjoy this episode of Black Museum, entitled Bloodstained Brickbat.
This is Orson Welles, speaking from London. The Black Museum. Here in the grim stone structure on the Thames, which houses Scotland Yard, is a warehouse of homicide. A museum of everyday objects. Cigarette boxes, appointment books, a hat rack. All are touched by murder. Now here's a brickbat. Coarse-grained, rough-edged, familiar. Perhaps your own home is built of bricks, exactly like this one. In this case, however, no home was built by such a brick. Rather, a home was destroyed by it. Destroyed forever.
It's still such a normal-looking object, Inspector.
Is it really? With that broken corner? With the stains still on its edges?
I suppose you're right, sir. If there's one thing that can upset normalcy, it's spilt blood.
And today, that blood-stained brickbat can be seen. Here in the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum.
Well, here we are in the Black Museum. Scotland Yard's Museum of Murder. Yes, here lies death. Upon these tables, within these cabinets, the files of death, labeled with day and date and name of victim. Here's a hat rack. Odd to find such a commonplace object here, perhaps, but observe. Here where the wood curves from base to shaft, three brownish stains. Blood dripped here. From a weapon concealed within the lining of an overcoat. Three stains. Which placed a murderer at the scene of crime. Broken alibi. That's another story. Here's our brickbat. Of such bricks are garden walls built. Later the ivy or some such creeping vine grows over them, hiding the sharp edges, softening the four square contours. This brick, too, was meant for such bucolic purposes. But as it happened, things didn't work out that way. We might say it all began when young Anne Friskin composed an advertisement and told her much older husband, James, about it.
So you're placing an advertisement. Wanted, boy, about 18. References, handyman work. Some such thing?
Exactly, dear.
Oh, very good. Only don't let him get too close to Alma. It might not be good for him.
A simple domestic scene. Wife cooperating with husband, or the other way around, if you prefer. Some small mention of the husband's cousin who stays with him. That's all. The advertisement appears in the usual help wanted columns. Several young men apply. One is Dick Terry.
Yes, ma'am, I've had some experience during the summer at my uncle's place in Dorset.
The money's all right?
Oh, quite generous, ma'am. What with the room over the garage and all.
Well, your references seem quite good. And a good school report, too.
The boy settled into his job and worked out well. The gravel driveway was soon in good condition. The lawns were well mowed. The bricks were ordered for the repair job on the garden wall. Yes, the bricks were ordered. And in the household, all was well and quite normal.
One more hand, ladies?
If you wish, Dame.
Aren't you satisfied with beating us again, dear?
I suppose I should be. But it must be somewhat dull for you, Anne, dear, night after night with just Alma and me.
In the household, as we've said, all was well and quite normal. Undercurrents? If you look for them, perhaps otherwise a retired, well-to-do gentleman in a suburban London home, living quite happily with his lovely young wife and his cousin Alma. Still, one never knows, does one?
Good morning, Dick.
Oh,
well, the work is coming well, isn't it?
Yes. Lovely day, isn't it?
Nothing quite like the springs we get here, is there?
Awfully quiet there. Yeah.
Yes, I suppose it is. For someone your age.
Begging your pardon, Mum, it don't seem to me like you'd be giving up just yet.
Oh, thank you, Dick. It's nice of you to say so. Aren't you getting those bricks a trifle uneven, Dick?
Ah, that's on purpose, Mum. It's a trick I learned from my uncle. It gives the creepers and vines and such a better hold.
It's clever. You do know your work, don't you?
I hope so, Mum. A person likes to do his work where he's appreciated.
Well, you are. No fear about that. And just to prove it, come up to the house, Layton. We'll see about finding you a nice cold drink. On a warm day like this, a cold drink would...
No, after all, it's quite natural, isn't it? You'd do as much for your help, wouldn't you? No one would think anything of it. No one did in the Friskin household either until these trips for the long, cool drinks became somewhat habitual, at which point Alma spoke to Anne.
Do you really think you're doing the proper thing, Anne?
Of course, it's none of my business, I suppose, but...
What are you driving at?
That boy.
He's an excellent worker.
People will talk.
About what, pray?
Oh, nothing. But people will talk about nothing, you know. And if James should hear from the wrong person...
Please be explicit, Alma. I don't happen to have a devious mind.
It's quite simple. James is past middle age. You're young, vital. The boy is undeniably attractive with that flaming hair and all. And he is up here at the house quite a good deal.
And you're suggesting...
No, of course not. I am merely pointing out to you how it can look to the neighbors.
Frankly, I don't care. Please don't bring the subject up again, Alma. I refuse to discuss it with you.
Alma did not bring up the subject again, not with Anne. However, she waited for an opportunity, and then...
James.
Yes, Alma?
I want to talk to you.
Aren't we rather formal today? Closed doors and all that sort of thing?
I'm not speaking behind anyone's back. I've already taken this up with Anne.
Oh? What's the trouble?
It's that boy, Dick Terry.
Dick? Alma, don't tell me he's been making advances.
That's not funny, James.
Oh, sorry. What then?
Anne is letting him spend too much time at the house. His place is in the garden and the garage. People will talk.
Aren't you doing a bit of talking yourself, Alma?
I'm doing my duty as I see it.
Then you've mistaken your duty. I'm fully capable of protecting my honor, as you doubtless would call it. And I'll thank you, Alma, not to bring this up again. Although, doubtless, you have the best intentions in the world.
Very well, James. But if anything does occur, you'll thank me for warning you.
Yes, Alma awaited her opportunity and spoke to James. That worthy and decent gentleman dismissed the incident from his mind. That should have been the end of it. Unfortunately, however, the whole matter was reopened. And in quite a different quarter.
Good morning, Dick.
Morning, Mum.
Oh, the hedge does look nice.
Thank you, Mum.
Is anything wrong, Dick?
Matter of fact, I'm giving notice.
Why, Dick? But why?
I'm giving notice.
But what's wrong? Have I done something? Or is it about your money? Because if so, I'll speak to Mr. Friskin at once.
Don't bother, Mum. I'm leaving. Call it wanderlust. Call it anything you like.
Dick. Dick, look at me. Oh, do stop clipping that hedge and look at me.
Yes, Mum?
I insist on knowing what's wrong. I thought you were happy here. I know I've been happy to have you here.
I'd rather not... All right, Mum, but... You asked for it.
I asked for what?
It's you, Mum. I'm crazy seeing you day in and day out and having you nice to me. Just nice to me and thinking of you with him and... Me not having the ghost of a chance. I can't stand it, Mum, that's all. You'll have to let me go.
Poor Dick. You've held this inside you all this time.
Yes.
Oh, Dick, I'm so sorry. so terribly sorry. Come here.
Fire in the garden, flash fire in dry grass on a warm summer morning, perhaps in any case. The boy stayed on his job and nothing further was said in the household. Everything was routine, quite normal. Even the bridge games in the evening, three-handed bridge, of course. July moved on into August. Hot, muggy August nights.
Well, I'm going up to bed. Coming in?
Not just yet, dear. I think I'll read a while. It may be cooler in the library. Good night, dear.
Good night, then. Good night, Alma.
Good night.
A hot, muggy August night. Dark. No moon. Barely a breath of air. James tossed restlessly, sleeplessly.
Anne, that you, Anne? Coming to bed, dear?
No, no, go, go!
Well, today, that brickbat can be seen here in the Black Museum. It was Anne's screams which brought Alma and then some of the neighbors. James was not dead, but nearly so. The doctor, Dr. Kinder was his name, examined his patient and proceeded quite efficiently via the telephone.
That's right. The ambulance at once with oxygen equipment. I want the operating theater ready, anesthetists, nurses, and my assistant. Friskin has a badly fractured skull, and with his heart condition, he has about 1 chance in 100 to live. Hurry. I'll wait for the ambulance.
Oh, no.
Now, the police.
Police?
Well, ladies, a man is attacked, half murdered in his bed with a heavy instrument of some kind, and you question my calling the police.
Oh, if only I'd gone upstairs with him. If only I'd gone upstairs.
If you had.
Operator, ring through to the police, please. Hurry.
Oh, to walk in like that, to find him there, the blood. Oh, his poor head.
Breathing that awful gasp.
This is Dr. Kinder. Let me speak to the superintendent, please.
Dick. Where's Dick?
Yes. Where's Dick?
No one had missed the boy until Anne thought of him. With all the excitement, all the horror, no one had realized he was missing. Dr. Kinder finished talking to the superintendent of police and turned back to the two women.
Dick. The superintendent is sending an Inspector Ralph. Very good man, he says. CID.
CID?
Criminal Investigation Division. Did I hear you mention someone named Dick?
Yes, Dick Terry. He's the hired man. Well, more of a boy than a man. He has a room over the garage.
And he isn't in the house? He hasn't been here?
No. The neighbors came, but not Dick.
Perhaps I'd better fetch him.
No, stay here. The police will find him.
The police will find him.
They did find him, but in his room over the garage.
Where was he, Sergeant?
In the attic, Inspector, hiding in a corner.
All right, son, speak up. Why?
I got scared. That's it, scared.
What of?
I heard Anne, Mrs. Friskin screaming, and I ran over from the garage, and when I got up to the room where the lights were on, Miss Galpin was carrying on, and Mrs. Friskin was just standing there screaming, and he was on the bed, and I just ran.
You didn't offer to help. Why not?
I couldn't think. Nothing.
Why?
I guess I didn't want to be blamed for doing it.
Who would blame you?
Oh, somebody. Anybody.
Did you do it?
No. I never touched him. Never.
All right, Sergeant. Hold him in the kitchen.
All right, sir.
I'll talk to the Galpin woman now. What is she, a companion or something?
Cousin of the victim, sir. Lives here.
All right, send her in.
Alma Galpin knew nothing except the discovery of her cousin in the bedroom. But the inspector was curious.
The hired boy says he was scared. Have you any idea why?
Well, he's been making sheep's eyes at my cousin's wife.
Oh?
People were talking. He's a good-looking boy. She's so much younger than poor James. You know how an ignorant mind works sometimes.
The inspector knew. Also, he was a considerate man. He implied as much to Anne Friskin.
I know you've had a terrible shock tonight, Mrs. Friskin, but I have to ask you a few questions.
Of course, Inspector. I'll try to answer.
Did your husband have any enemies? Anyone who might want him out of the way?
Oh, no. No one. Everyone liked James.
Even the boy, Dick Terry?
Dick? Oh, no. No, you don't think that Dick...
I don't know yet, but we'll have to hold him, Mrs. Friskin. He seems to have something of a motive. At least, there seems to have been some talk.
They held Dick Terry on an open charge pending developments at the hospital. There, James Friskin hung on the fringe of death, barely breathing, completely unconscious. At the house, Alma faced Anne.
The police. What do they know?
I don't understand.
They're holding the boy. They're not even looking for the weapon. And meanwhile, whoever did it could be miles away.
Then you don't think Dick did it?
It's too pat. Of course not. Why would he? Even... You never gave him any encouragement, did you,
Alma?
Did you?
You're hysterical.
I know exactly what I'm saying. And I don't believe that boy raised a finger against James.
Then why did he hide?
Wouldn't you, in his position? The police, arrest, the most obvious person. That's all they know. Someone ought to teach them their business. Obviously, they don't...
Well, there are those who would like to teach the police their business. Quite a few people would. Alma Galpin set out to try. And it was with that idea in mind that she appeared in Inspector Ralph's office at the local station house.
Well, Miss Galpin, sit down, will you?
Thank you.
What can I do for you?
How far have you got in this case, Inspector?
We're still holding the boy. The only charge at the moment is assault. If your cousin dies, well, that'll be another matter.
Then you've done nothing.
For the moment.
I see. I brought you this.
No?
Why don't you open it?
As you wish. Yes, I see. A brickbat with stains on it.
Don't you want to have it checked for fingerprints?
Rough surfaces like this don't hold prints. Why?
It's the weapon.
Oh? How do you know?
I found it. It was in the little pile of leftover bricks at the foot of the garden. James was going to ask the boy to build a barbecue pit with them.
I see. How do you know so surely this is the weapon?
That's blood on it, isn't it?
Might be.
Aren't you going to have it tested?
Probably. Miss Galpin, do you realize that this brick might be the piece of evidence to hang that boy?
It might be. It might hang someone else, too.
Is this a charge, Miss Galpin?
Who stands to gain most? Who would have her freedom? Who would get James' money? Have you thought of that, Inspector? Who wanted the brick wall repaired? Who spent altogether too much time in the garden? Have you given any thought to these questions, Inspector?
Perhaps the Inspector had. Others had, that was certain. And suddenly, with one sentence, Dr. Kinder changed the entire complexion of the case.
I'm sorry to have to tell you, Mrs. Friskin, but your husband passed away about 10 minutes ago without ever regaining consciousness.
Now it was murder. And Anne Friskin, the young widow, came to the station house to see Dick Terry in his cell.
Here, ma'am. You have 10 minutes.
Yes. Thank you.
I'll be back in 10 minutes.
Oh, Dick.
I didn't do it, dear. I'm stuck for it, but I didn't do it.
Oh, Dick, you don't think for 1 minute I believe you did do it.
How should I know what you believe?
Well, you know me better than that. I want to help you.
I know you better. Do I? Do I know any more about you than you know about me?
Oh, Dick, don't talk like that. Please, please let me help you.
With what, a axe or blade?
I'll get you a lawyer. I have money now. I'll take care of
you. Sure. You've got money now. You've got it all now, and I've got a murder charge. Anything you may say will be taken down in writing and may be used in evidence against you.
After what you told me in the garden.
Oh, forget it. Maybe that never happened. Maybe I was really crazy. Maybe you figured more than I meant.
Well, what's the difference? He's dead and you've got everything.
You keep saying that. I've got everything.
Well, haven't you? Isn't it what you wanted?
Oh. You think I did it?
Oh, do I? All I know is I didn't, but I'm stuck in this rotten jail. I won't peach on you if that's what you're worried about. Not unless my own neck can't be saved any other way. Oh, maybe you did, maybe you didn't.
Not a very pleasant scene. Not a very pleasant circumstance. The young woman, the boy, the sadly tender phrases of a summer morning shattered between them. However, in the offices on the floor above Dick Terry's cell, Inspector Ralph and Sergeant Hopkins were more interested in facts than in phrases.
So pathology reports it's Friskin's blood type on that brick. It's the weapon, all right. But who used it?
The boy had a crush on the wife.
Badly enough to kill for her? No, I doubt it.
There aren't any alibis, sir.
That's the trouble. He says he went to bed as usual. No one saw him anywhere that night. The Galpin woman says she went to bed. The widow says she read for a while, went upstairs and found her husband.
Could all three have been in it together, sir?
How do you figure that, Sergeant?
Well, Mrs. Fiskin could have promised Galpin money, and Mrs. Fiskin would have had the boy. They might have planned to have the boy actually do it.
Come in.
I'm sorry, Inspector.
Not at all, Mrs. Fiskin. Come in. Sit down. I believe you know Sergeant Hopkins.
Yeah.
Yes. I have very little to say. It might be easier standing.
As you wish, ma'am.
I just saw Dick downstairs.
Too bad about him. He seemed a nice lad.
Yes, sir. Inspector, this is not the easiest thing for a woman.
I understand. You have an alibi for the boy. And yourself?
Yes. Yes, I do.
The inspector was an understanding gentleman. He offered no comment. He merely recorded a fact and let Anne Friskin leave his office with her own thoughts for company. Later that same day, he arrived with Sergeant Hopkins in tow at the Friskin house.
Ladies, we've done some further checking and investigation. We thought we'd apprise you of the situation.
I see.
Thank you for that, at least.
We're letting the boy go. He's in the clear.
I knew that all along. I told you so.
Yes, you did. I remember. The day you brought me the brickbat.
Where did you find it?
In the pile at the foot of the garden.
I see that you know Mrs. Friskin. There is no pile of bricks at the garden. It happens to be in the rear yard, near the back door, close to the foot of the back stairs. The stairs, which reach the second floor, quite close to the door of your room, Miss Galpin. Now, Sergeant, if you'll stay quite close to Miss Galpin and take down what she has to say.
Taken down and may be used as evidence.
Yes, the usual warning. Well, Miss Galpin, why did you kill your cousin, Miss Galpin?
She had everything. Even the boy with his sheep's eyes. I had nothing. I thought if I got rid of James, who was too dull to care, she'd be blamed. After her, I'm next of kin. I'd have everything. I saw the little pile of bricks. I meant to put them in the garden later. A brick is heavy. It hits hard!
Today, the brickbat can be seen here in the Black Museum.
Orson Welles will be back with you in just a moment.
They put Alma Galpin safely away, where she could harm neither others nor herself. Dick Terry left that pleasant suburb of London and dropped into the anonymity one can find only in a great city. Anne Friskin sold the house and went far from London to start over, perhaps, but to carry with her always the memory of tragedy on a hot, muggy night, and the memory of a mistake made through loneliness and mistaken kindness. Now, until we meet next time, in the same place, for another story about the Black Museum, I remain, as always, obediently yours.
Thank you.
hope you are not holding your breath waiting for Martian's exile. Welcome back to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Now enjoy this episode of Lights Out, entitled The Little People.
Ironized Yeast presents Lights Out, Everybody. Of the supernatural and the supernormal, dramatizing the fantasies and the mysteries of the unknown. We tell you this frankly, so if you wish to avoid the excitement and tension of these imaginative plays, we urge you calmly but sincerely to turn off your radio now.
This is Arch Ovaler. For Ironized Yeast tonight, a story of that still small voice which civilized men call conscience. But first, Frank Martin.
The way you feel, that can make all the difference in your life. If you're run down, losing weight, feel tired too much of the time, and if vitamin B1 and iron shortage is what's to blame, listen. Ironized Yeast tablets give you both vital substances. Vitamin B1 with iron. Men and women who were short of them now tell how these pleasant little tablets help them regain glorious pep and energy and needed pounds. So today they can really enjoy living again. Folks, did you get that name? It's Ironized Yeast Tablets. And now, Lights Out, Everybody.
Keep moving along, ladies and gentlemen. Keep moving. There ain't no life on here. Keep moving.
Hey, officer, what's going on in the hall? What's the blooming attraction?
Read the signs, my man. Read the signs.
Huh? Oh. The great Peter Stransky, world-famous explorer, appearing in person in lecture on headhunters of the Amazon. Go, Brian.
Move along, fella. Move along.
No, officer. Will you tell a bloke what that headhunting is referring to? Who's on to me?
Now, look here, you're obstructing traffic. It's lecturing the man. He's lecturing on these heathen tribes that hunt their neighbor's heads. Now, move along, man. Move along, or I'll take you in.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, now you know the story of these strange motion pictures I have shown you this evening. For the first time in history, motion pictures taken of the lower Brazilian region. Someday soon, I hope to return to Brazil and bring back more cinematic records of the customs of these almost legendary savages, including actual specimens of heads and bodies taken and preserved in their bloodthirsty wars. When that day comes, I hope you will be as kind to me as you have been this evening. And so, good night until we meet again.
Excellent lecture, Stransky. Excellent.
Yes. It went very well indeed.
Complete sellout. That headhunting theme meant excellent publicity in all the papers, you know.
Yes, yes, of course. Now, if you'll pardon me, my wife...
Oh, but my dear Stransky, autograph.
They paid to listen to my lecturing and see my motion pictures, not to get my autograph. I'm sorry, my wife, she will be waiting.
Oh,
and
come. Don't worry about her. She's well taken care of.
Eh? What are you talking about?
I just passed her backstage, and she had a handsome young gentleman having quite a tete-a-tete, don't you know?
You will pardon me.
Oh, come now, Ellen, you must do it.
Oh, but John, that's ridiculous. Who ever heard of such a silly thing?
I did, and that's why I'm telling it to you.
Well, I won't listen to another word. I really won't.
Oh, yes, you will.
No, I won't.
If I might be so bold as to interrupt.
Oh, Peter, it's you.
I'm sorry to interrupt your most interesting conversation, my dear wife, but we must go.
But, Peter, we...
Come, I said. The automobile is waiting.
But I... Very well, Peter. Good night, John.
Good night, Ellen.
Come.
Get into the car, Ellen.
Why don't you say something, Peter?
Yes. Yes, I will say something.
This.
Well, why don't you speak? Why don't you cry?
I wouldn't give you the satisfaction.
So, you save your tears for him, too. Say something.
I'm leaving you, Peter.
Leaving me? What are you talking about?
I spoke clearly enough. I'm leaving you.
Don't be a fool.
I'm trying not to be. That's why I'm leaving you. I should have done it a long time ago.
You'll go to him.
No, nope. I'm going to divorce you first, Peter.
Divorce?
I won't have any difficulty about that, I'm sure.
No, never a divorce from me, never.
You'll have no choice. Please stop the car.
Yes.
Goodbye.
Ellen?
I'm sorry for you, Peter.
No. I'm sorry for you. And him. Come in, Ellen. Come in. And you too, young man.
What do you want of us, Peter?
It was very kind of you two to come here and join me tonight.
You said it was important, Strensky. What is it?
Oh, have a chair. Sit down. There is no hurry.
Well, John and I, we're on our way to the theater. If you don't mind, Peter, tell us what you want.
I want little. We have come to what the novelist would call the parting of the ways. As civilized human beings, we sit down. I, the husband, you, the wife, and you, young man, the, shall I say, favored one, to discuss our welfare.
I'm sorry it worked out this way, Peter.
This life, perhaps the fault was largely mine. I was not a very good husband.
You're acting very decently about all this, Mr. Strinsky. All I can say is I love Ellen very much.
And you love him, Ellen?
Yes, Peter.
If we could arrange matters quickly, I mean the divorce and all that sort of thing.
Of course. I just said we are together like civilized human beings. And now, if you will excuse me, I will close the door. The servants, you know.
He's acting surprisingly well about it all, Ellen.
I'm not so sure, John.
So, now what I have to say, I say in complete privacy.
Peter, just why did you want John and me here?
Yes. We should come to the point. You and I, Ellen, I suppose there is no use talking about us anymore. Is there?
No.
So, all right, I will be a gentleman. I will withdraw as gracefully as my clumsy self will permit. First, then, we will sign the papers.
Papers?
I want you to waive dower rights.
Oh, just as you wish.
Excellent. So here is the legal form as drawn up by my solicitor. I assure you it's quite in order. You will sign first, young man.
Me?
Yes, yes, as a witness, you understand?
Oh, very well, my pen.
No. Use this one, please. Here. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, John, what's the matter?
Oh, nothing. Just a scratch. The pen point.
Oh, I'm so clumsy.
John,
oh, it's nothing, really. See, the pen point hardly broke the skin.
Yes, but it did break the skin.
Oh, yes, John. You see, a drop of blood.
Oh, it's nothing at all. Just a scratch. Unimportant.
Why did you laugh like that, Peter?
He said unimportant, and yet it is the most important scratch your young man has ever known.
How's that?
What do you mean, Peter? What's wrong?
You feel something, John?
What?
A constriction between the eyes, perhaps?
Peter.
Or maybe a strange pounding of the heart?
Peter,
or
what
perhaps,
have you done?
John, your vision blurs. You hear strange sounds in your ears. A great lover?
Peter, answer me. What have you done? John, are you all right? Tell me, are you all right?
I don't know. My head is so strange.
John, what
is
it?
I sit down.
Peter, what's wrong with him? What's wrong? John, what do you... Your lips...
You cannot speak, can you, John? If you open your mouth, the words will be your last. A great lover?
Peter, tell me. Tell me, have you done something to him? Have you? John, look at me, darling. Speak to me. Tell me what's the matter.
Yes.
John.
Yes, speak, John.
Eleanor,
John! Peter, help me. He's fallen. Peter, help me. Help me.
Help you?
But, John, look at him. Look at him. He's ill. Dying. A doctor, get a doctor.
Not a doctor, my little wife. Doctors cannot restore even great lovers after the poison of Barakata has entered the veins.
Poison! That pen! That scratch!
Ellen, you must... So, the thought of your lover's death draws the blood from your head and you faint, eh, my little wife? When you awaken, you will wish that you died with him. Again.
My arm.
You are bound in a chair. It is most discourteous of me, I know, but then, as you may remember, I always was a barbarian.
John. John.
You will keep your voice down.
John. You've got to tell me. Where is he? Why am I down here? John's not dead. He can't be dead. He's on that table, under the sheet. Not John.
Yes, John.
John, you've killed him. Let me loose. Let me go to him.
Stop that.
John.
Stop making that noise, you mad woman. Stop it. Stop it, I say. All right, I'll stop you then. I'll stop you. All right. There, my little boy, scream, yell, rave all you want. This gag over your mouth serve its purpose well. Go on, you amuse me. So, now you have discovered it is useless to talk to the gag, eh, Ellen? It is such a waste of effort, is it not? So now that you are silent, I can go on with my work. Most important work. Yes, you were right about what was on this table here. See? I throw off the sheet. And he was such a handsome man. Well, I must get to work. Ah, you no longer try to speak, my little Ellen. Does the sight of these beautiful surgical instruments frighten you? They need not. They're not for you. They are for John. Yes, he is dead. Dead. The poison too quickly, but do you think I would let him rest in death? Oh, no. I loved you, Ellen. And as I loved you, I hate you. Watch closely. What? I'm sorry, I cannot understand you. Oh. You ask me what I'm going to do. The knives, sharp knives, you see them? No, they are not to dismember your precious John. Flesh buried, decays, and is gone. I want your dear John with me for a long time. Again, you ask the question. I'm trying so hard to explain. He's dead, and he will be dead. But in his death, he will serve a purpose. You remember I told you my savage Brazilian friends, the Yavaros, have a quaint custom of shrinking and preserving the bodies of their enemies. Well, I studied their methods most carefully. John Douglas was my enemy. Here he lies. And I will do with him as the Yavaros do with their enemies. So, now you understand. When I'm through with him, your lover will be a little leathery-skinned man, a doll-like in size, a trophy for my trophy room. Who will suspect that in that little leathery doll-like figure is the body of an Englishman? And so he will amuse me in his death. Yes. And you will sit there, my little wife. You will sit in that chair for the many days it will take me to prepare the carcass. You will sit and watch me day after day as with smoke and with heat I make the strong body of your lover smaller and smaller. You will sit there.
Ladies and gentlemen, a deep breath, please, before we go on with this story of a jealous husband and the strange and terrible revenge he took against his wife and the man she loved. Yes, before we go on with tonight's lights-out story, a moment for relaxation and a return to the realities of today. The place is a shipyard, and a worker is saying,
I quit my desk job because I wanted to help build ships to win the war, but I'm afraid I can't keep on. I'm losing weight. I'm so restless, I lay awake most of last night again. I feel so tired out so often when I know I shouldn't. I hardly know what to do.
Do? Why, find the cause of your trouble. And if it's a deficiency of vitamin B1 and iron, get ironized yeast tablets.
Vitamin B1 and iron? Ionized yeast tablets? I don't understand.
You see, you're working harder now, so naturally you need more strength and energy. But when you don't get enough vitamin B1 from your food, you may lose your appetite, not eat all you need, and so lose weight and strength. And without enough iron, you may be weak and pale and too often feel all in. But ironized yeast tablets give you both vital substances. Vitamin B1 with iron.
Maybe I better try ionized yeast tablets.
By all means do if you're deficient in vitamin B1 and iron. Ironized yeast tablets have greatly helped many, many others with these deficiencies. See if they're not of equal benefit to you. See if before long you too aren't saying...
Since I've been feeling so much better, I sleep like a baby. That tired out feeling is gone. I'm sure glad I tried ironized yeast tablets.
And now back to our lights out story of the little people.
Fire is warm. Hell, warm, so very warm. The air filled with smoke. The dry, swirling smoke, see how it coils around him. At first, how often you cried out when I talked like this, but now you're silent. Weeks. How many weeks has it been? 4, 5, 6? Used to take my savage friends 10 weeks to dry and cure the bodies of their enemies. 10 weeks. And I have done it in 5. Look at him. 6 foot strong and broad he was, but now a doll in size, a small brown doll. Oh, what weary days they've been, filling the body full of sand and slowly turning in the smoke and the heat, not too quickly, not too slowly, not too close to the flames. And now, the man that was John Douglas, a doll, a brown doll of death. The flames are noisy. Noisy as you are silent, little Ellen. You are... Oh, I hadn't noticed. Your eyes are closed. Wake up. Wake up! Wake up, I say. You've got to look at him. Your eyes have got to see him. You've got to see him. You're speaking. I cannot understand you. The gag, yes. Yes, I will take it off. Sitting there all these weeks, you haven't got the strength. There, that does it. Your lips are free. Well, look at him, Helen. Look at him and tell me what you think of John Douglas now. Stop, you hear? Understand? You must
smoke
understand.
Smoke, he will wait for me.
Smoke. What are you raving about?
Yes, smoke. The old curls around him.
No.
He's waiting.
No, stop talking like that. Stop talking like that, I say.
He's waiting.
The knife, where is the knife? Yes. I'll stop you. No! Ellen, I... All right. Dead. Up on the table with you. I must prepare you, Ellen, for the smoke and the fire. It took me 5 weeks with him, and now 5 more weeks with you. And then you will be as he is. Brown with the smoke of the curing fire. A little doll in size.
The Borneo and the Celebes are not the only savage tribes which indulged in this most curious pastime of collecting human heads as trophies. In my travels in far-off places, I have come across at least 20 other races who participate in this strange custom.
Let's get out of here, Mamie. Weather means as dry as dust. Oh, but who cares about Ed Hunt and men and the likes of that? Let's get out of here and go to a cinema. Squat.
Oh,
all right, all right.
And they went raiding and killing their enemies, generally in nocturnal surprises. These savages severed the heads of the dead and returned with them to their villages. Members of the tribe believe their rank in the next world depends upon the number of heads secured. But, unquestionably, the most curious custom is found among the Yavaros of South America, who not only sever the heads of their enemies, but also are known to shrink the bodies of the dead until they are small, almost doll-like in size. These bodies are kept in the large huts and treasured highly. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I have a surprise for you. In my recent trip to South America and my visit to the Yavaros, at great personal risk, I was able to procure two of the macabre specimens. Yes. Yes, I have here in this trunk the shrunken bodies of two full-sized human beings. That is, at one time they were full-sized, but now they are the size of large dolls. A man and a woman, ladies and gentlemen, perfectly preserved. The only specimens of their kind in existence outside of the sulfurous jungles of South America. Never before have they been seen or displayed upon the lecture platform, but tonight I am going to show them to you.
And now you make your public debut, my two beauties. Aaron and John, the new sensation of the lecture stage.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you please, presenting two perfect specimens, the only ones of their kind, of the secret process which enables the savages of the jungles of South America to reduce their enemies to doll-like size. Here we have a living man, about 6 foot in size during his lifetime, now reduced to midget size. And likewise, here a woman, once a living, breathing individual like you and you and you, now this horrible trophy of the curer's eye.
You see, Alan and John, they like you. You are a success. A huge success. You're talking. You. No. No, you cannot talk. Dad, you cannot talk. No. You cannot talk. You're dead. You're both of you dead. Stop talking. Stop. Stop.
Sure, Captain, it's a strange passenger we got aboard this time, I must say.
Oh, you mean Strensky? Aye, strange he is, mate. But what's he running away from, sir? Sure, mate, that ain't a proper question to be asking of a man when he lays as many pound notes on the table as that man did for this passage. Get me out of England tonight, he said. And get him out of England I did.
Now, could he be one of them embezzlers?
Oh, aye, that he might. The trunk he was carrying, but he wouldn't let any of the men lay a hand on it. He brought it down to the cabin himself.
I'd like to get a look in it.
Aye, and so would I. But he stays in that cabin of his all the time. He's down there now, and I'll bet he's looking in that trunk this very
The cabin door is locked. No one can come in when the door is locked. It's going to stay locked until we get there. South America, they won't get me there. No one will get me there. Why did I run away? What's the matter with me? No one heard them but I. No one in that audience but I. They're in that trunk there. There's two of them. Why don't I find out now if no one heard them but I? Why don't I? For sure. Yes, I must. No, they couldn't have talked, not they. The two of you lying there. You didn't talk, did you? No. No, of course you didn't. You're dead. You're more than dead. Hollow flesh shrunk by the smoke of heat until you're smoky little dolls.
Aaron and John, I'm free of you forever. Forever. You, Alan. Thing that was Alan. Why don't you say something? Again, I heard you again, the two of you, I heard you. No. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it, you little things. You can't speak. You're dead, burned in the flames. Stop it. All right, I'll stop you. I'll stop you. Into the sea. I'll throw you into the sea. Come, you and you. I've got you in my hands. I'll throw you into the sea. First, you, Evan. Into the water. There. And now you, John. Into the sea. The sea will stop that tongue of yours. There. Now I'm through with you. Through with you. The water will stop your mouth. It stopped it. And three of you forever. The two of you forever.
Huh? What's the matter? What's the matter?
The matter? Oh, what do you mean, Captain? Nothing's the matter.
Well, I thought I saw you throw something in the water. In fact, I'm sure of it.
Oh, just some old things. Yes, that's it. Some old things I didn't want.
Oh, I see. Well, as long as everything's all right.
Yes, yes, yes. Everything's all right. Now.
It's a weird night, isn't it?
Weird? Why do you say that, man?
Yeah, it's so dark. No moon, not a star in the sky. It's like we were sailing at the black of a tomb without even candlelight to lead us. You know, if I was a superstitious... What in the devil's name is that?
What? What are you talking about?
There, to starboard, see? Two lights. Take it, what lights are those?
They're coming closer.
Our ship lights? No, that can't be. Why, I've sailed these waters for 16 years.
It's they.
What?
The two of them, their faces. See them gleaming faces. Alan, John, get back. Back to the water I threw you in. Back.
Lenski, what's back. Come over you? Back. Stop leaning over the rail. You'll fall in. You'll fall in, man. Look out! Oh!
Help! I fell in. Help me! Here! I'm here! Save me! Save me!
Yes, I'll stay afloat. They'll save me. I won't die. I won't. They'll save me.
No, Peter.
Take his other arm, Evan. I have his leg.
No. Let go of me. Let go.
Come, Strensky.
Join
us. No, stop. Alan, John, the two of you, stop. You're pulling me under. Drowning me. Drowning me. No, no.
Well, Mr. Obler.
Well, Mr. Martin, what are you looking for tonight? Rationalization, morals? For, of course, the moral of tonight's story is a healthy and a hopeful one. That evil is its own undoing. That reminds me, Frank, outside of Hitler, Hirohito and Company, have you a nomination for the evilest man of the year?
Well, leaving Hitler and his fang-toothed friend out of it sort of restricts me, doesn't it?
No, because anyone who thinks that evil is impersonated only by the militarist is quite naive. But you have your say, and then I'll have mine.
Do people say you're slipping, that you can't take it anymore? Well, if you're short on vitamin B1 and iron, if that's why you're losing your pep and sparkle, remember, ironized yeast tablets supply both vital substances. Of course, a rundown condition may be due to other causes. If in doubt, see your doctor. But if you simply need more vitamin B1 and iron, get ironized yeast tablets right away. They've been of great help in scores of such cases. In fact, ironized yeast has been so successful that it's sold on this no-risk, money-back basis. If you don't begin to eat better, to feel better, and so sleep better, the cost of the first bottle will be refunded to you in full by ironized yeast, Box IY, Rahway, New Jersey. And now, what about this Mr. Evil of 1943?
Well, I'd like to tell you about the evil now. I feel like it, but I'm going to tell about him in a play called Murder Castle. Yes, Mr. Evil of 1943. It takes place, as usual, at a time called next week.
Yes, tune in next Tuesday again for Arch Obler's eerie story, Murder Castle. And if you need more vitamin B1 and iron, be sure to try ironized yeast. But remember, there's only one ironized yeast. You'll know it instantly by the yellow and orange package and by the big letters IY on the container and on each tablet.
Listening to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Join us again next week at the same time on the mighty KONR. Don't forget to play What Will Mrs. Thompson Say at LGAP.com. Now, stay tuned for the Sasquatch Report.